God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, help me carry your message today. In Jesus' name, amen. Wednesday night we started the big book, but I just gave some general observations, and I read the treatment plan for Jim Gott from his alcoholism counselor on how to treat alcohol in 15 sessions, and it was a self-help program. And I was trying to compare it with what we were given in 1939 for what we have. And I was thinking today that the coronavirus mutates, and so does influenza, but alcoholism hasn't mutated. It's the same disease. It's a hopeless condition of mind and body. And that was the purpose of this book in 1939. This is the copy of the original. And this was written so that we didn't have to die. And the disease hasn't changed. And I've go to some discussion meetings, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But I don't know that the disease is talked about enough, what it really means. What it means to be an alcoholic, what it means to be powerless over alcohol, what it means to have an unmanageable life, and what the solution is. And I've been studying scripture, and this is not the New Testament. This is not a book of scripture, but I believe it was given by God so we could practice his spiritual principles. There's nothing in this book that's incompatible with the principles of the New Testament and how you live a life of progressive sanctification. And so the cover, they made it a big book, and it's called The Big Book, and I think that does us some disservice that we don't call it Alcoholics Anonymous. So, like, not using the Lord's name in vain, I'm going to try to call this the Alcoholics Anonymous, the book, because we lose something when we call it, quote, the big book, study the big book. But this is Alcoholics Anonymous. There was no Alcoholics Anonymous before this book. There were three groups, one in Cleveland, one in New York, and one in Akron. There were maybe, by the time the book was published, by the time it was written, started writing, there were maybe 60, 70 people sober. And now this book has been 25 million or more copies, maybe 50 million copies, different languages, and it's helped a lot of people. The first page of the book is blank. And somebody told me, I didn't make this up, that the reason the first page is blank is that we want to leave everything we know behind when we study this. What does that mean? It means I have ideas that I think I know things, and I think I know things that are true, and they're all wrong. They were all wrong when I came in here. I thought all my resentments were true. Anybody believe that? You know, I thought my motives were good. I thought I was trying to be helpful. I was misunderstood. Anybody else misunderstood when they came in here? I had all sorts of crazy ideas. I still do today. I know things. I'm very smart. Like, I'll look at Netflix and I'll see the title and I'll say, that's no good. It's no good. I don't like the picture. It's no good. And then I'll change my mind and watch it. It was really good. I've done that with books. I won't like this book. I don't like it. I read five pages, I'm not going to like it. And then I read it, and it was one of the best books I've ever read. They wanted me to go to prayer service on Sunday. I joined the new church. And I said, no, I can't go to prayer service. I can't sit still for an hour. You know, I have ADD, if in case you've noticed. And unless I'm talking, that's what my wife says. And God bless her, she's gone, so I could talk about her for a couple days. She's coming back tomorrow. But I went, it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. And that happens all the time. So they're saying, leave behind everything you think you know. And where did we read that? We read it today. We have to let go of all of our old ideas. Absolutely, are the results what? Nil. And what are our old ideas? They're our resentments, our fears, everything we bring in here, and we have to let go of them. And Chuck C., who was a famous man, he had a very good message, very spiritual. He said every day he wakes up and he says, he calls Father Dad, what else am I going to be wrong about today? Because I like to be wrong. Because when I'm wrong, I can see truth. And I lived on wrong, and I want to live on truth. And I couldn't see the truth till I worked the steps out of this book. And it says the story of how more than 100 men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And so it's important that we become recovered. And why is that important? I don't want to be recovering, I don't want to be in recovery. It sounds good, doesn't it? I don't know what it means, but I want to be recovered. Now, recovered is not cured. I'm never cured from alcoholism, but I have a daily reprieve from it contingent upon maintaining a fit spiritual condition. And recovered means that today I'm not dominated by alcohol or drugs or whatever was dominating your life and your thoughts, and you had no power over it. I have a power over alcohol today, not through me, but through God. And so by seeking God and maintaining contact with Him, I'm not under the power of alcohol all day long. I might think of it today, probably not. I haven't thought about alcohol for a while. But I'm not under its power. Wouldn't that be great? Anybody addicted to alcohol? Wouldn't it be great not to? What about drugs? What about heroin? Wouldn't it be great to be free of that, or narcotics and things? It's great to be clean, sober, and not under the power right now. And so that's what they meant by recovered. But recovered's fleeting. You can lose it. And that's why it's important to work the steps. And not just step four, everybody talks about it, but to get to step 10 and 11 and live in the world of the Spirit. Now, why is it important to live in the world of the Spirit? Well, that's when you're recovered. And I read page 85 on Wednesday. I won't read it again right now. But those are the recovered promises. If you're interested, I did a whole podcast on them. I've done several on them. And it says you're not fighting anyone or anything, right? You recoil from alcohols from a hot flame. Anybody still have a gas burner? You don't want to put your finger in there, do you? Or anybody grill? You don't like put your finger on the thing to test to see if it's hot, do you? No. And so we recoil, and we recoil from alcohol. Why? Because it's a bad idea. And that's from God. These are gifts from God. Recovered promises are promises that come true when you're with God. You're in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Isn't that great? Who wouldn't want to get that? Now, why am I blathering like this? Because that's the purpose of this book, is to get us to page 85, to the recovered promises, and help us live there. And if we stay there, we'll never drink again. Somebody said, and I think it's true, don't prove me wrong, that if you do everything in Into Action, chapter 5, which is steps 5 through 11, and chapter 4, and how it works, chapter 5, 3, and 4, you'll never drink again. I believe that, if you keep doing it. But you have a daily reprieve. If you stop doing it, guess what happens? The ego rebuilds. And the mind says, you know, I've been sober 6 months. I can get sober again. You know, I know where to go. I could have a drink today. How's that going to work for you? Bad. And people have done that. A lot of people have done that. I did that after, what, 15 years. My life was so bad, I said, how can Kahlua make it worse? I mean, it was. I was in such a bad situation. Somebody asked me how bad it was the other night. I didn't go into all the details. Well, I was practicing medicine. I'm not going to give a fifth step to 110 strangers. But when I came back from treatment, there must have been 150 big Kahlua bottles under the stairway. And I had to carry them. I should have taken a picture, but I didn't have a phone those days. You know, it was 2002. That would have been a good picture, wouldn't it? All you have to do is show that picture. And you know, I looked at it and I said, you know, I'm a real alcoholic. Not only the fact that I had the bottles, but that I didn't carry them upstairs. You see, and they were under so nobody could see them. You know, it was an unfinished area. All right, I'm rambling again today. Let's turn to the foreword. To the first table of contents. Because the table of contents is very important. This book started with page one, Doctor's Opinion. It has a foreword, which I'll go into, which is very important, because it tells us who this book is written for. And the doctor tells us what the problem was. Bill's story tells us somebody who had that problem, who worked the solution, and what happened to him. There's a solution describes the problem, how we have no defense against the first drink, and then what the solution looks like and where we got the solution from. We got it from Dr. Young in Switzerland, who was a psychiatrist. Calm down, guys. I'm the only one that's allowed to make jokes here. Dr. Young was a psychiatrist, and Dr. Silkworth was a neurologist and a physician, and they told us the problem. And they told us the solution. The Oxford group gave us the program of action, and that was a group of people practicing first century Christianity in the 1900s, trying to grow in likeness and image of their creator. And they had six steps. More About Alcoholism is an important chapter. It's to remind me that I'm screwed. It's to remind me that I have no defense against the first drink. Now, what does that mean? A lot of people come to AA and say, well, yeah, sure, no defense. But what does it mean to have no defense against the first drink? It means that you have no defense against the first drink. And Brian's not here today. I'll put him on probation. But it's at certain times, right? At certain times, the alcoholic cannot recall into consciousness. What does that mean? I cannot bring into my mind with sufficient force the humiliation and defeat of even, I say, a moment ago. And what does that mean? It means willpower won't work. The 15 tasks that Jim's supposed to do won't work. The triggers won't work. Because everything's a trigger when you're an alcoholic. If you're breathing, you have a trigger. Because you're thinking. Your mind is your enemy. Because it tells you things that aren't true. That's why we want to live on the truth. And so we have no defense against the first drink. Why? More About Alcoholism tells us. Because I get a queer mental twist. That's what they call it. This thought comes into my mind that a drink will fix whatever's going on. And they give us four examples. The man of 30, he decided that he wanted to make money. That was more important than drinking. But when he made enough money, he was going to be able to drink. So at 55, the slippers come out. He's dead in 4 years. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Anybody agree with that? Right. So we can't have like a plasma transfusion. It's not going to work. An exchange transfusion, nothing's going to work. And then the second example is Jim. Jim's a great example because Jim kept getting drunk, going to treatment, and he took the first three steps, and he met with people from AA, and he went to sell a car for the place that he used to own. Get it? And he went on Tuesday. So we don't know where Jim was on Monday. And he had words with the boss. And then he went to the country to sell a car. Now why, and in the country he knew there was a bar, you see it? Didn't shop on Monday, resentment, he doesn't own the business, had words with the boss. Anybody relate to this? And then he goes to the country to sell a car, and he knows there's a bar there where he could get lunch. And he's been there before, he's telling himself all this, and I didn't drink. And then he's in the bar, and he's having his drink, his meal, and he says, and he has a glass of milk, and he says, you know, if I put whiskey in the milk, it would probably be okay. Now, how insane is that? And then it says, off started another trip to the asylum for Jim. And here was the thing. He failed to enlarge his spiritual life. Steps 1, 2, 3 won't do you any good unless you take the action to have a power in your life, God, who will say, bad idea, Jim. You're not feeling good. You come to me. You work the steps. You work step 10, 4 through 9. You get back to me. You don't have to drink. It doesn't say that Jim ever got sober. That's the interesting thing. Then we have the jaywalker, which is, it was in honor of Stu, right? Because, you know.
That's where you start the book.
You know, Stu had a bad day. Can I tell him, Stu? Stu had a bad day. He's going to a barbecue. He decided that he needed some to stop in Lawrence for gas, and they just happened to have a bunch of beer there. And then off started another day for Stu, and poor Stu, who's driven from Kansas City to Topeka, what, 1,000 times? At 10 o'clock at night, he's calling Siri, how do I get to Topeka? And he's on I-70. And I love Stu. Stu's changed my life. Stu's sober almost 5 years. But that was the moment that he needed. And so Stu read the jaywalker. And the jaywalker is somebody who keeps running in front of cars and gets hit. But he thinks it's fun. He likes running in front of cars. He gets hit a few times. And then he says, well, you know, I need to run faster. And then things start happening to him. He gets in the hospital. And then eventually takes the solemn oath that he's not going to run in front of cars. Anybody do a solemn oath? And then he immediately runs out and he gets hit again. And they say, isn't that really what alcoholism is? We keep running in front of the car and we don't think we're going to get hit. And so they talk about how the disease then centers in the mind and the way we think. And then the final, is this okay, this review? And then the final example is Fred. Now, Fred's a great example because Fred was very successful. He was a successful businessman, but he kept having a problem with alcohol. He kept getting admitted and having 6 times, and he had to go and he had to get cleared up. And so Fred has these guys, and he says, I like what you told me. It's amazing I can remember all this. I like what you told me, and it's good information, but you know, I don't know. I don't know that I'm really an alcoholic. So he goes on a trip to Washington. And here's the key. It was a perfect day for Fred. Everything went great. So he goes into the, see, we can drink on a perfect day. We can drink on a bad day. It doesn't matter. We're awake. And we'll get into that, why that is, in a minute when we read the foreword to the first edition, if we get there. And so Fred goes to the restaurant and has a drink, and then he has more drinks, and before you know it, Fred's flying home, he's lost, and then they come to see him, and I think they laughed. You know, he told them what had happened, and he says, I don't see much to laugh about. And then Fred said, you know, I can see it. I am an alcoholic. And then I have no way to beat this thing. And then he started to work the steps, and he gave himself completely to God. And he recovered. And so then it says at the end, more about alcoholism, it says, once again, the alcoholic has no defense against the first drink. Now, Brian made the point last week. It doesn't say the new alcoholic who comes to AA. It says the alcoholic, that's me today, has no defense against the first drink on my own without God. So what's the only choice I have today? I can't. My choice is to seek the power that gives me choice. And then we agnostics, it's all about God, and God is inside of us, and we just need to find him and let go of the things that are blocking us. How it works is step 3 and 4, into action is 5 through 11, and then working with others. And then to wise, family afterwards, employers, is how you practice the principles in all your affairs. And then a vision for you is a kind of a summary of the whole deal. So let's look at the foreword to the first edition. So they wrote this book, and this is who they wrote this book for. And this book is falling apart. It's on hospice, but I just can't get rid of it yet. And the foreword to the first edition is on page XIII. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. So this book is not written for people having a bad day who want to try to learn how to drink or know that alcohol is a problem and they want to stop. This is for people who know they have a hopeless condition of mind and body. Now, what is that hopeless condition of mind and body? The body, my hopeless condition is I have an allergy to alcohol, that if I take one drink, I want a second one. Anybody else have that? I can't get rid of that. Darn it. Wouldn't that be great? You could have a few drinks and be like other people. It's not going to happen. And what's wrong with my mind? There's several things wrong with my mind. One thing that's wrong with my mind is that I cannot choose not to drink sober. That my mind will tell me to drink and I can't say no to it. Anybody else ever have that problem? And that's never going to go away. I will never be able to say no to my mind telling me to drink. That's called an obsession of the mind. So the alcoholics have two problems. They have loss of control when you put alcohol in you, and they have loss of the power of choice over alcohol. Now that doesn't mean I've lost the power of choice this morning. No, it means I've lost the power of choice forever. Now why? My mind's been damaged in many ways, but my mind's been damaged because I learned that alcohol would change the way I felt. Or if you like drugs will change the way you feel. But I think it's dangerous if you're a drug addict to drink, and I think it's dangerous if you're an alcoholic to use drugs. I would encourage you not to. But your mind's damaged. And my mind said, boy, if I have a drink, it'll make me feel better. It'll remove my fear or my irritability or my discontentment. It'll give me a sense of ease and comfort. Anybody ever have that from alcohol? Well, that was good. But your mind learned that. And that's okay, but we have an allergy of the body. So when we drink, we can't control how much we drink. We get into trouble. And so my mind was damaged. And my mind said, when I don't feel good, Michael, alcohol will help me. Now, that's not a true statement, right? But I would believe it, because then I would think about what it's going to do for me, not to me. And that's why you cannot think your way out of this, because willpower won't work. Because right, because you want to drink, you're only thinking about what it's going to do for you, not to you. Did anybody feel better on the way to the liquor store? Anybody feel better when you're getting ready to get your drugs? you feel better already. The relief's coming. And once that's in your mind, you can't say no to it. That's powerless over alcohol. Now, it's a seemingly hopeless condition because they had found a solution. So that may be the most important word in the big book, seemingly hopeless. But unless you know you have a hopeless condition of mind and body, then the rest of it won't work. Now, it's seemingly hopeless, and here's why, because they had recovered. So that's why I think if I do what they did, I'll have what they have. I had no plan that would work. Did anybody else have a plan? Anybody else write a book that has? No. And so to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered, and in this book it's in capitals because Stu said they probably didn't have italics in those days. Precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. So if you are a real alcoholic and you have alcoholism, they wrote a book for you to show you precisely how to recover. So why wouldn't we want to study this? That's why I teach the big book. What about the 12 and 12? The 12 and 12 was written 15 years later by one man on his thoughts on the steps at 15 years or 16 years. And it was basically to write the traditions. And so we would follow the traditions, and that was the purpose of it. And then they added the steps so people would buy it, and he got royalties from it, Bill W. It was a whole new world. And that's not a bad book. It's got a lot of good stuff in it. But try to work the steps out of it. Try to see the directions in recovery and how to recover in it. You can't. It's just essays and observations on it, which are very good. I enjoy reading it. But a lot of people do 12 and 12 book studies. You know why? I figured it out. Because each chapter has a step heading. So you can read step one, and you can cover that. Step one isn't, there isn't step one in the big book. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say, now we're on step three. It does on page 60, you see? And the steps aren't outlined in precisely that way. And so the 12 and 12 is very good to study. I recommend it, but I think that's more graduate school. I think that's like doing your post-medicine, you do your internship and residency. But I would do this first. And so I think that book is great, but I've noticed a trend in Topeka where people study the 12 and 12 and not the big book. And I don't know whether that's good or bad. I don't have an opinion. But that's what this book is about. We hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. So if you come here and you feel like you have a hopeless state of mind and body, they're going to show you how to recover from it. Isn't that great? Now, the next page, it says the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. Now they put honest in here. They took it out. It's a desire to stop drinking. But I think that's misleading because what's required to recover? Not an honest desire to recover, right? What's required to recover is to have a relationship with God. So that when you think about alcohol, God will say, bad idea. And when you're full of anger, you've learned a step and a prayer so you can be free of anger, so you don't have to drink over anger. When you're afraid, you learn a prayer for fear, and you understand why you have fear. And so you can get back to God. You don't have to drink over fear. And then if you practice God's character, you're not going to harm people, so you won't have shame and guilt. You see it? And so if you want to stop drinking without action, it's a fantasy. It's just a fantasy. And So that's Ford. I usually talk about the Ford to the second edition and all the history. I'm not going to do that this time. I just finished going through a vision for you and went through all of Bill and Bob and all of that. And then I'm going to end in a minute. So what is really the cause of the hopeless state of mind and body? We have an allergy to alcohol, right? And our mind wants to seek the ease and comfort of alcohol, but alcohol is not the problem. It's the solution to our situation. Now, when does the disease of alcoholism occur? When you're sober. Sober without God. Son of a bitch, everything's real. And our problem is that I'm separated from God. Chuck C. said there's only one problem, conscious separation, and one solution, conscious contact. I talked about that Saturday night. And so I lived my whole life separated from God. Why? Because I was running the show, because I had this delusion that if I could just manage the world well, I would be okay. Anybody else have that? I tried so hard. It was exhausting. And when I did that, people didn't do things the way I wanted so I could have happiness and satisfaction. So I got angry. Anybody have anger when you come in here? Anybody ever been in a relationship where the person didn't do everything the way you wanted? Or at work? Or in life? Or family members? And I was in constant fear. Why? Because I was relying on me. And when I rely on me and I'm not God, I had the wrong manager and I was in constant fear. My whole life I was uneasy. It's like the water I swam in. Why? Because I was afraid I wasn't good enough and people wouldn't love me and they'd find out the truth and blah, 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 and I wouldn't get chosen for the little league team. And oh, it was endless. And so I lived in constant fear. And I was judging everybody to feel better. And I had low self-esteem. And I had excessive pride to protect myself. And so my basic trouble that I was separated from God, living on self, self-centered. And what I want mattered. Trying to get what I think I needed all the time to feel okay. Now, did you ever feel okay? I did. I would have a good day. You know, things would go well. But in the long run, it didn't work. And so I made decisions based on self, which caused me to harm myself and others. Anybody else do that? And so I ended up with a wristband. And so my problem was me, and it's the way I thought, and it was my separation from God. And my solution now is God, not alcohol. So when I don't feel good and I'm feeling resentment or fear or anxious, I go to God. I say, God, this is how I am right now. I'm judging, I'm impatient, I'm intolerant, whatever. Change me. Help me be loving, kind, patient, tolerant, considerate, compassionate. And it works most of the time, you know. And so, and it works all the time when I do it. And so I rely on God now, not me, and I don't want to drink today. Alcohol won't make me feel any better than I am right now. So I don't know, that was kind of a summary of the deal. And so on page 84 it says, we enter the world of the spirit, that's where God is, and we want to stay there the rest of our lives. And now here's the warning. Okay, you're in AA 20 years. You're still going to wake up in the morning and thinking about yourself. And you have to stop and say, God, direct my thinking. And you're sober 30 years, and you're still going to get upset at the, where were we yesterday? Jim and I were at Cracker Barrel, and the guy was taking forever to pay the bill. And he said, well, this is like Walgreens with the coupons. And actually, I was so spiritually fit, I didn't even notice. But Jim did, you see, so Jim needs more work than me. And so, but then once he pointed it out that I needed work, because I said, yeah, you're right. And, you know, we're just silly. So it's a constant way. We have steps. Why do you have to work the steps? Because you have to have actions to get back to God when you get away from God. And if you come here and you don't have a relationship with God, you just come to meetings, how long can you stay here sober with your emotions before you drink again? So Grady was telling me, oh, we had 8 new people and we have 50 people there, and I'm really happy for Grady. He's doing a great job at the church. But how many people are going to stay? Or how many people are getting somebody their numbers and getting help and getting going through the steps? And we have so many people now, and I don't know how many people can actually sponsor, have done this. And so that's where I see the need. And now we even have more dangerous situations with the drugs and alcohol. People can die a lot sooner. It takes a lot of alcohol to die. You know, drink, you get cirrhosis. You could drink for years. But now with the dual diagnosis, people can die quicker. So that next time we will start with doctor's opinion. Okay? Do not let me review. Okay.